All right, guys, welcome to the show. Ryan Healy, a 5-year MLB vet, spent some time with the A's, Mariners, and Brewers. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Bryce. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I love getting former MLB guys, and it's always a joy to talk to you. And my first question would have to be, who inspired you to make baseball a career or a passion of yours? Was it a coach, a family member, an MLB player you looked up to? Who was it for you?
Man, Bryce, we could sit here all day and talk about this, I'll be honest with you, but the one person that comes to my mind first and foremost is my dad. He instilled the love of baseball in me when I was 3 years old. I actually told this story not too long ago. We used to go up to Ventura Beach, take our RV up there and go camping out, and my dad and I would play wiffle ball on the beach for hours on end. And just the amount of fun that we had, I mean, talk about a core memory. That's really where it kind of started for me. He would hit the ball as far as he could. I'd run after it, come pitch it, and then he'd throw it to me. And that's really where our journey began, just kind of progressed through the years with that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I think for a lot of people, their dad or somebody close to them like that is definitely a point of inspiration. It's always great when a father can help show the son the game like baseball because it's such a great game and your whole family can enjoy it and love it.
Yeah, I'd say from about 3 till I was 13, 14 is when he started to kind of, I don't want to say step away, but gave me my space to grow. And more importantly, handed me off to coaches that knew a heck of a lot more than him about the game of baseball and more importantly, like the details of coaching. So I was grateful that I got that 10 to 11 year period with him where it was just him and I competing. He wasn't necessarily teaching me swing mechanics or how to have this perfect rotational pattern or anything, or the goal wasn't always let's become a big leaguer. We just loved competing together and more importantly, spending time together. But once I started to show some of that ability to actually compete and do really well, he started to outsource some experts and some other people that were able to help me progress even further.
No, that's really good because oftentimes you'll kind of see a parent, and especially a lot of times a dad, he'll try and kind of, take over his son's baseball career and kind of like live through him. So it's great that your dad seemed to know when to step away.
Dude, I have times. I do lessons now. It's my way to stay in the game. And I have dads that I have to talk to. And it's challenging because I'm a 32-year-old man and I have to challenge these parents that are in their mid-40s and say, when he's in my cage, he's with me. I need you to stop talking to your son. I need you to stop coaching your son. You're paying me good money to be here for my advice and my expertise. Let me deal with your son while he's in my cage. And if you decide that I'm not for you by the end of this, that's totally fine. But you have to create some of those boundaries and the respect points, and I think the kids ultimately are the ones that benefit from it.
Most definitely. And so going back to your kind of childhood, was there a certain point in maybe whether it was middle school, high school, or even college possibly, where you knew that like, hey, this baseball thing could really become a career for me? Did you have a certain turning point where you realized that was a possibility?
Man, career is a tough word for me because I don't know if I ever really thought it was gonna be a career. Maybe in college, definitely some points in high school. Dealt with some adversity in high school in regards to injuries, where I had some scouts that were at a game, hurt my arm pitching, and had to recalibrate, figure it back out. And then I would say towards my sophomore, junior year of college is when it really started to become a reality. But yeah, I did always want to be a professional baseball player, but I can't say it was like the driving purpose of my existence.
Gotcha. And so you didn't say it was necessarily the driving purpose of your existence, but was it something that was kind of in the back of your mind after you got to a certain point, like, hey, this would be really awesome. Let me work towards this goal.
Maybe to some regard. I think if I denied that, I'd be lying to your face. I don't know if I've really gone back that far, though, into like what my perspective was as a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old of what were my goals? What was I thinking? What was I saying out loud? Was I manifesting this stuff or just kind of happened? But the things that I do remember is my dad challenging me to stand out on the field every single day, whether it was getting a hit, pitching well, making a defensive player, being a great teammate. Find a way to stand out and be the best player on the field every single day with just one thing that you do. And that kind of snowballed for me.
And so my next question would have to be, so you go on to college, you're great there, and then you get drafted by Oakland. In the minor leagues, did you notice a huge talent disparity in pitching in regards to college and minor leagues? Like, was it a really long adjustment period? I know you had success in the minor leagues, obviously, but was it something that you were like, whoa, I didn't expect it to be this crazy of a talent level?
I would just say it was more like how consistently we were playing. In college, you played Tuesday and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you had more days to prepare for the next game or that pitching, the starting staff you were going to face. Whereas in pro ball, you might have like 30 minutes to kind of game plan for the pitcher you might be faced that night, but not just the starting pitcher. You're also kind of trying to game plan the entire bullpen. Because, like, all right, I know who your high leverage arms are. I know who your 7, 8, 9 guys are. I'm going to prepare for them. But then you're also going to have some nasty guys that are just going to fill in. The velocity and the stuff is what stood out to me the most. And if you go look at my first, we'll say 400 at bats in professional baseball, I got my absolute ass kicked every single day. Like my first year in short season ball in Vermont, I was hitting maybe 210. And by the end of the year, I only played like a month and a half, 2 months. And then my next season, I was a month into the year and I looked up the scoreboard and I was hitting a buck 80. And I was probably days away from getting sent down to low A. I skipped low A, went to high A, and I thought I was days away. And my manager told me later that year, he goes, "Just so you know, you were real close to getting sent down right there." I was like, "I don't blame you. I was hitting a buck 80. Like, I wouldn't have blamed you there."
Yeah, I had to ask you that because I always wonder, because obviously D1 college, I know it's crazy, and that's coming from somebody who played just in high school. You know, I don't actually know, but obviously I watch the games, you see the speed, you see the movement, it's crazy. And so I just couldn't imagine how tough it must be to even go at a higher level beyond that into the minor league. So I was just curious as to, you know, how difficult it actually was. So thank you for that insight.
Yeah, and you throw the wood bats in there as well. Between playing every single day, I mean, if you go 7 times 4, I'm getting 30 at bats a week. I'm used to getting maybe 15 at bats a week. Like you can go 0 for 15 and still sleep at night. Like, you know, the good ones are coming. You start mixing in a couple 0 for 20s, a couple 0 for 30s, you lose sleep real quick.
Did a physical fatigue kind of set in since you were essentially like doubling your amount of baseball being played?
Yeah, at times for certain. My first year coming off the college season, I did have some injuries that I was rehabbing that first kind of month when I signed. And then as it progressed, I was okay. I definitely prepared different that offseason, though. The 2013, that entire offseason, the preparation for that next long haul season was different. We usually call like the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season, like it's just grind mode. You're grinding your face off. You're trying to get into that almost that flow of where, okay, the fatigue that's setting every night all of a sudden just kind of goes away. Your body's in autopilot. Now we just kind of function day in, day out.
Yeah, one other thing I was curious about is maybe did you change your diet or anything like that, or the way you worked out in opposed to when you were in college to the minor leagues?
Yeah, I ate a lot more peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the minor leagues, that's for sure.
Really?
Yeah, the diet almost got worse in the minor leagues because
Really?
I think the Dodgers were the only team that really invested money into their minor league diets, at least when I was coming up. I'm sure it's
Wow.
different now, but yeah, that was the biggest thing is we learned how to eat Chipotle for almost every meal, and we called that a well-balanced diet. That well-balanced diet.
That's actually so surprising to me because, you know, minor leaguers, that's the future of your team. You would think they'd almost put more care into that than they do the big league team.
That's too logical, though.
I guess so. And so what I want to know about now is, can you tell me your story of how you got called up to the big leagues? I always love hearing about this.
Man, 2016 was a roller coaster of a year. I'll even backtrack a little bit further. So in 2015, I was in San Antonio with one of my best friends, Matt Olson, and we were roommates together, always on the road. And we ended up booking like a Europe trip for that offseason, just sporadically at the end of August. We knew when like playoffs were going to. We knew the season would end at some point. So we booked this like 3.5 week Europe trip in our hotel room in San Antonio. Went to the field the next couple nights, and all of a sudden, like they were trying to figure out who they were going to send to the fall league. And Matt Chapman was supposed to go. He was going to be the guy that was going to represent the A's. So I was like, "Oh, well, I'm not going this year. So what?" And Chappie got hurt. So all of a sudden, the opportunity was either me or Renato Nunez. I remember I sat down with Keith Lippman. He was the farm director for the Oakland A's, and he told me, he's like, "It's between you and Nooney right now. We're going to see what kind of happens." And I told him straight to his face, said, "Lip, I just booked this 3.5 week Europe trip with Olsen. I will cancel it right now, but I need to know at some point in the next few weeks, like if I'm going or if I'm not going to fall league. Like baseball is my number one priority, but I this Europe trip is a once in a lifetime. So you tell me what to do and I will make the decision." He's like, "You know what, Ryan? You go to Europe. It's going to be an awesome trip. You and Matt will have a great time." So Nooney went to the fall league. I didn't get invited to big league camp in 2016. I repeated double A and all my friends went to triple A. So that was kind of a gut-wrenching moment. And I had a choice. I could either sulk or I could flip a switch and put a bigger chip on my shoulder and see where it takes me. So went to double A that year, spent about 6 weeks there, tore it up. Got called up to triple A for 6 to 8 weeks, tore it up. I represented the A's in the Futures game that was in San Diego that year, and I had a phenomenal game. I think I went 2 for 3. Just, it was unbelievable. Being a Southern California guy, I had a lot of family and friends there, so felt really comfortable. So I drove from San Diego back up to LA for the rest of the All-Star break. I flew out to El Paso to go meet the AAA Nashville Sounds there, played the first game. Manager called me in the office. I think I had like a strikeout or a ground back to the pitcher, and I didn't run it out really hard. And he called me in the office after the game, and he was chewing my ass out for that, getting in there. And I was like, it was a new manager. It was a guy I haven't played for yet in the minor leagues. Steve Scarsone, great guy. And he was kind of going through it with me, and he was like, "You need to understand something, Ryan. If you do that same thing tomorrow, Bob Melvin's going to send you right back here." I said, "Excuse me?" I got like tears, hands, I'm facing my hands. Like I blacked out. I don't know what happened. So here I was in El Paso, Texas, and I got the call. I was flying out that next morning, called my family. Everyone came and met me in Oakland, and I ended up opening up the second half with the team that year. So that was really cool.
I love that he had to tear into you at least one time before he sent you off to Oakland. That's
Dude,
a
I'm like just had to get you one last time. Thank goodness I didn't go back there, but I
know
got
he
lucky. I
enjoyed
stayed up
that
for a
too.
while.
You
Oh
know
yeah,
he
for sure.
enjoyed that. So you get called up to Oakland. And I don't know, anybody take a second, look at your baseball reference page. You tore it up in that initial stint. You even win a Rookie of the Month award. But what I want to ask you, did that type of success, did it make you feel like the pressure was off of you to recreate it next season? Or did it actually have a reverse effect where it added more pressure to where you're like, oh man, I got to do something just as good or better next season? How did you feel?
Man, I felt confident. I felt like I was locked in. But the difference that happened all of a sudden is I was exposed to the business side of professional baseball. You know, minor leagues, you don't really think about much. And in the major leagues, there's a lot of distractions that all of a sudden become a reality for you. Having to balance that. What really got me that year, though, I was locked in. What got me was on my birthday, January 10th of 2014, the A's went out and signed Trevor Plouffe. We went to the same high school, very different years, but he was a veteran 8, 9 years in the big leagues, everyday third baseman. I was supposed to be the everyday third baseman in Oakland until Chapman got there. So they went out and signed Plouffe. All of a sudden, I'm like, I just hit 300 as a rookie. Like, why are we replacing me? It didn't make sense, but it's business. I get it. So I would say that was the first real loop that I was thrown for in Major League Baseball. And the challenges that I faced the next year was trying to balance how do I play first base, third base, DH, and kind of revolving door. And that was kind of the first piece of adversity that I really hit.
I'm coming up. You just touched on it. Did you always play both corner positions, or was that something you kind of learned to hopefully open some more doors to you in the MLB?
Dude, I didn't play third base consistently until pro ball. I played a
Really?
little bit in the Cape Cod League in summer ball, but I was an everyday first baseman. And I tell people to this day, like, I was not the best third baseman that was available. I just hit, and normally they'll find a spot for a guy that can hit. So I really had, thank goodness I had Ron Washington my rookie year in Oakland, who changed my life. I wasn't perfect. If you look at my fielding percentages, you'll see what it kind of turned out to be. I was not the best third baseman in the major leagues, but I could hit, and I had competitive at bats. And luckily, I played first, third, and DH throughout the minor leagues because I had Matt Olson, I had Renato Nunez, and myself. So the three of us kind of had like a platoon going on to the point where Olson almost was playing outfield. He played right field for a handful of games. Like it was crazy. Like Gold Glover at first base in the big league, Silver Slugger, like I can do it all. And that, so I kind of had some experience at it, but not with the same pressures that the major leagues kind of brought.
What type of work did you do, like specific drills, maybe just a quick run through to help get comfortable at third base?
Dude, I had to relearn the angles. Like first base playing, be a right-handed first baseman. Like I had funky angles that I had to work with naturally. but I've been doing it all my life, so I was good at it. But the plays that I had a really hard time with was the double play throw, getting the right alignment to make that throw, to get that throw to the back of the bag, because I would miss in front of the base a lot. And if you've seen guys slide in the major leagues, this is before the rules kind of changed. I'm hanging my second baseman out to dry on the regular basis. And then the throw to first base, I would leave my throw up the line a lot. I kind of had like a natural three-quarter arm slot being a right-handed first baseman, because I would always have to pivot my feet all the way around, and I would kind of throw from that three-quarter slot, and I can kind of play the two-seam in there. It didn't work at third base. I was killing my second basemans and killing my first baseman. So I had to work really hard on kind of that first step after you catch the baseball, of getting my direction set to first base and then using my legs to help get that carry across the diamond.
Wow, thank you. That was so interesting to hear about. And it's also funny that you mentioned Ron Washington helping you. I swear, like every interview of a baseball player I listen to, at least half of them say Ron Washington helped them in the field.
I had a great conversation this week. I reconnected with an old hitting coach of mine, Johnny Washington, who's the head hitting coach over in Anaheim. And I was talking with him. I'm like, man, it's crazy. You guys have three coaches on that coaching staff that impacted my career tremendously. Between Ron Washington, Johnny Washington, and Tim Laker, who's the assistant hitting coach over there, all three of those guys have spent countless amounts of hours with me on and off the field in the batting cage, working, just impacted me just as much as a player as it did as a person.
So you just talked about the work you had to put in. So what I'm curious about, could you walk us through what your routine is like on a game day? So like let's say you had got a 7:10 start time at the Oakland Coliseum. When do you wake up and what do you do right up until game time?
I usually wake up around 10 or 11 o'clock, honestly. Like, I would go to bed at 1 or 2, depending on how wound up I was from the game. So we'll try to get 8 to 10 hours of sleep. I wish I could get that now. I got two young kids, two under two right now, so I don't get that sleep ever, but it's worth it. So go to bed, let's just say 2 o'clock, wake up at 10. Have some breakfast at the house. I'm at the field by 1. I'll usually have a quick bite to eat there. I go to the weight room, get my body activated, get a workout in if I need to. From the weight room, I'll go to the cage. I'll go get my routine done in there. And then I'll usually have like an hour or 30 minutes to go watch some film, game plan for the pitcher we have that night. So I get a lot of things done before we ever get to batting practice. So after my game planning in the video room, I'd go out to the field. I'd work with Ron Washington for about, I don't know, 15 to 30 minutes, depending on the day. So now I have my defensive routine done. I have my offensive routine done. My body's loose and activated. From that point, we go out to BP. We would have an hour of BP, get my ground balls in, get my swings in. And from there, we'd go back in. We'd eat a quick bite, and then we would have a hitter's meeting. From the hitter's meeting, I was really strict, man. From that, I would have like 15, 20 minutes of downtime, and an hour before the game would start, I'm in the shower. From the shower, I'm coming back, putting my uniform on, going to the training room, getting some things kind of tuned up. And I'm on the field about 20 to 25 minutes before game time starts, going through a band routine, a running routine, and then a catch play routine. And then we roll it out there.
Wow, that is a lot. And I'm really glad you just told that to everybody because I maybe not really hardcore baseball fans, but I'm sure there's people out there who think you just roll up maybe like an hour before the game time, put on your uniform, and then walk out there. You just illustrated it's like a 9-to-5 job. Like that was almost pretty well, that's over a full 8 hours right there, what you just
I was
described.
usually at the field for about 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
Like, there's times I'd get to the field at 11, 12 o'clock, and times I wouldn't leave the field till 11, 12 o'clock.
So it's truly like a full-time job. It's not just 3 or 4 hours in the game.
There's a reason they give us 3 to 4 months off in the off season, because we need to completely decompress our mind and our bodies.
Definitely. And something you just touched on actually led perfectly into my next question. It's game planning for pitchers. So let's say you're facing, I don't know, Verlander tonight. How does your team game plan? Is it like a team meeting or is it something that you're left to do independently? How do you game plan for pitchers in the MLB?
A little bit of both, to be honest. You're always going to have a hitter's meeting where, depending on the team and how they kind of run it, they'll go over a wide variety of things. Like, so you'll have every position player in that meeting. So they'll go over a ton of defensive alignments, what the lineup kind of looks like. So they'll kind of start with that. And then we'll go into hitting. We'll talk about the sequence that the pitcher has. We'll talk about percentages of what pitches are in the strike zone and what counts. We'll go through some more details like that. And then from there, we'll kind of watch some highlights. Usually they'll take every guy that's in the lineup that day. If they face that pitch in the past, any hit that they've ever had, they'll just run through highlights. So that's kind of how the team game planning goes. And then individuals, like, this is what I loved. Everyone had a different kind of routine for how they would prepare for that pitcher. Marcus Semien taught me in Oakland my first year in 2016 the way that he would game plan against any pitcher. If he would go in the video room, he would take the last 3 to 5 starts from the pitcher that we were facing that night, and he would just select extra base hits, so double, triples, and homers. He only wanted to see highlights. And I didn't understand at first, and I kind of kept asking him questions, picking his brain. He's like, "Ryan, I don't want to know what all of his sequences are. I don't want to know what all of his pitches are. I don't care. I want to know what pitches that I can do damage on. I want to see where the mistakes are coming in. What zones is he missing? What pitches, secondary pitches does he hang?" Narrowing down what our individual approach is going to be that night, the simpler it can be, the better off you're going to be.
Would you say that game planning for each pitcher is essential to success in the MLB?
Oh man, I can't say like a blanket statement of yes because everyone's so different. I definitely had to learn how to game plan and make adjustments throughout the course of the years. And it ended up being where, like, by the end of my career, the last couple of years, I was watching so much video the night before on. I would choose every right-handed hitter that they face over the last 3 starts and just kind of start watching some sequences, looking zones that they were attacking, how they would kind of set different pitches up. So I needed more time that I had available in the day of the game. And I also like to do some visualization the night before. So I'd watch a lot of the pitcher's previous starts, kind of see where he's at in his flow, because they have stats on us. They know what my batting average is for the last 7 to 12 games, whatever. I want to know what his numbers look like for the last 3 to 5 starts. Is he feeling sexy or is he getting his ass kicked a little bit? It's good to have some of that because it's almost an immediate confidence. Like, oh man, this guy's getting his ass kicked right now. He's walking a lot of guys. I know I need to be a little bit more patient up there in the box.
Would you also game plan for relievers too? I know it wasn't as prevalent when you played, but nowadays you'll see a guy, they'll start a guy who only throws 2 innings and they'll throw 4 or 5 pitchers in a game. And it's by design that they do it that way. So did you also game plan for relievers?
Oh yeah, that's what the hitters meeting were. You know, we'd always have, you know, the back end bullpen guys, 7, 8, 9. We go through the high leverage pitchers. And then from there, some specialists. So if you're a righty or you're trying to watch what lefties you might face, especially if you're a bench guy, like if you're coming in late in the game, you know that you're going to get a pinch hit against a lefty. That's kind of your opportunity. So I'm doing some deep dives on those if you're not starting. And if I am starting, I'm going to roll through the majority of them, to be honest, but trying not to overload my brain with information. The nice thing about the major leagues compared to the minor leagues is you have iPads in the dugout. So I can literally, if they're making a pitching change, I can be on deck. I can walk in the dugout. I can watch a couple minutes of video of this pitcher that's about to come out. Now I know what pitch he throws. I know what shape they are. And I know the release points that I'm looking for. So I can kind of gather some quick information there, build some confidence, and then I can walk up there and have my bat.
That's actually really interesting to know what you're doing because the TV, the camera will pan to you guys looking at iPads at least a couple times every game. So what you're doing is just looking at the film from either like a previous at bat or a pitch that you saw.
Yeah, and they changed a lot of the rules. Like when I was playing before the 2017 Astros situation kind of happened, we used to be able to go into the video room during the game. I'm not positive what the rules are right now for that, but you used to be able to go in the video room during the game and you can watch your last at bat. So like in Seattle, Nelson Cruz was our DH every day. If he wasn't hitting, he was in the video room. He was watching sequencing of the pitchers, how he was setting up. Like it was the most detailed thing I've ever seen. Like that guy's success was not by mistake.
Yeah, it definitely seems like, you cram your brain with film and stuff and it does pay off. Like you do have to put work in to get results on the field is what I'm hearing.
100%, man. I mean, that's the preparation for the game is kind of where our confidence comes from, because the problem with baseball is that there's so many things out of my control once I step on the field that I have to figure out what I can control and I have to obsess over those things. And that preparation is what's going to give me the success ultimately in the game. It's not going to be just, oh, I got a 0-0 fastball and I was on time and I got lucky there. It's no, I knew that this guy throws a high percentage of 0-0 fastballs and I had to be efficient to get in the box and be ready to hit.
And so leading more into, like you said, preparation, I want to talk about off season. At what point after the season ends would you start picking up a bat and hitting again or throwing again? Is it immediately after? Or like I imagine, would you give your body a couple weeks maybe? What's an off season like for you?
It fluctuated from year to year. This might be one of the places that I struggled was I made a lot of changes just because you wouldn't have success that season. You're thinking to go back and reinvent the wheel. I don't think that's entirely true. Usually the month of October, I only played in playoff baseball one time and that was COVID year. So I usually had October off. I would always take October off. I would plan a trip somewhere, completely decompress. And November 1 was normally when I'd start. So like all the month of November, I'm building up my hitting. And then usually come December time, I'll start doing some defensing, some more agility, some more running. And usually mid-December, I'll start throwing and build up kind of throwing progression. So I like to kind of draw out a progression for what I think the next couple months are going to look like and just kind of start with the end in mind of knowing that spring training report date is this day and I got to work backwards from there.
Did your team ever send you a program or maybe like guidelines of like, hey, work on this or maybe try out this? Or was it just totally independent?
Totally independent.
Wow, that's a lot of trust they put into guys.
That's a nice word to say there, yeah.
I only have a couple more questions, and this one's kind of a fun one. I just want to know what walk-up songs did you use during your career? That's always an interesting question.
Man. I use No Diggity a ton. I used that in college and I did really well that year. So, baseball players were superstitious, were routine oriented. I felt like I got the most hits with No Diggity, so that was one that I use a lot. I use Cardi B's I Like It Like That in Seattle a little bit, so that was a fun one. I think that was it. I always ended up coming back to No Diggity though. Like that was just kind of like my bread and butter.
I feel like every guy probably has their one song that they think they hit the best with, or they know they hit the best with, and that's what they go with. That makes sense.
Exactly.
Another question. Are you a collector of your own memorabilia? Like myself, I'm a big avid baseball card collector. Do you collect any of your stuff or mementos from your career or other players?
Not a ton of my own stuff, I would say. Something that I've done fun. I'm trying to see if I have it around here. I've started using, like, I got a bunch of baseball cards around. So I got like a bunch of these. I start using these as bookmarks. So I read a lot now. I don't
My
normally,
wife
I'm not
does
used
the
to reading
same
a lot. So I started using my baseball cards as bookmarks. It's just kind of a nice reminder for me, a nice confidence boost at some point in the days. I did playing first base a lot. I was able to talk with a lot of guys. So you can see I got Big Poppy's jersey behind me and I got Adrian Beltre's. Those were two of the first ones I got in my rookie year. So I probably got about 15 plus signed jerseys from guys, like from Hall of Famers to just buddies. And I'll probably say I got a collection of 50 plus bats that are signed by tons of guys as well.
Oh, that's awesome. And so my final question, what's some advice that you would give to a high school or even a college player who wants to have the success that you had?
Fall in love with the process. Fall in love with the grind. Fall in love and obsess with the things that you have control over. Stop worrying about the results. Stop worrying about the transfer portal. Stop worrying about NIL. Stop worrying about what pick you're going to be in the draft. Fall in love with the process and obsess over the details that you have control over because those are the things that are going to make the biggest impact and the biggest change on your short-term and your long-term career.
I really think those are truly wise words, and especially from somebody who achieved what you achieved, like hitting 13 plus home runs in 3 straight seasons is no joke, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Appreciate you letting me open the yearbook up today a little bit.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate you letting me get a peek back in the curtain and see what your routine was like. I really appreciated your time. This was amazing, Mr. Healy.
Thanks, Bryce. I appreciate you guys inviting me on here.
Thank you, man. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.